coming up on the latest edition of Serie A Awesome. We will give you our far too early season conclusions and predictions and recap what's gone down in the first seven rounds. We then preview the return to league action, the big one, Napoli against Milan. What Juve will we see? Can Inter return to winning ways? Can Roma's aging attack help them over the hurdles ahead? And speaking of forwards, can Prandelli improve the men he's already got at Fiore? It's all coming up on Serie A Awesome. Welcome into the latest edition of the show. It's the usual crew with you. And as you heard, we are going to really jump ahead of ourselves and give our far too early season predictions. But before we do that, just a recap and a reminder of the table. From first to fourth, it's Milan, Sassuolo, Napoli and Roma. And then behind them in fifth, sixth and seventh, it's Juve, Atalanta and Inter. So I'll start with you, Matteo, because I know what stood out for you so far after the first seven rounds is the team that's at the top of the table.
Yeah, it has to be Milan, continuing on from the post-lockdown period where I thought, okay, maybe because it's such a weird time and so many teams have injury problems, they're playing three matches a week. It's a small sample size relatively. And, you know, we've all been scarred, right, watching Milan for the last 8 years, seeing the demise, the constant changes, the talk of Ralph Rangnick coming in and yet another change and another revolutionary and another philosopher. They keep Stefano Pioli. They keep Zlatan Ibrahimovic. They have the youngest average age in all of Serie A, and they continue winning. They've been undefeated now in Serie A. I even forgot count, and they're top of the table. And I actually think, and I'm going to say this, I think for the first time on Serie Awesome History, that they do have a chance for the Scudetto. Because Juventus are stumbling. They don't really have an identity yet. Inter are inconsistent. Why can't Milan win it? Would it really be the craziest thing in the world when you have Zlatan Ibrahimovic, a generational player, leading the line and taking the mantle responsibility on his shoulders? Absolutely not. I'm saying it. Milan have a legitimate chance to win the Champions League. To win Serie A. I got carried away. It's just
they're going to win something they're not in.
It's the DNA of Milan. You know, you think of Milan, you think of Champions League, you think of seven trophies. Yeah. I think they can win the Scudetto.
All right, we'll get back to that. And I'm sure we'll be reminding him of it throughout the season. But Nikki, for you, it's the team that's in second, Sassuolo.
Yeah, I have to, you know, just quickly question when Matteo says we've all been suffering through these years. I don't know if some of us have been suffering more maybe than others in that period, but I agree with you.
You have, Milan, you just haven't realized it yet.
I agree that Milan being there is a surprise, although I will remind Matteo that I asked, I think, before the season started whether they could be a dark horse. So that's not as surprising to me as Sassuolo being unbeaten in second place. Again,
you said, why not Milan? I remember.
Yeah. So Sassuolo, undefeated. They've got the best possession numbers in the entire league. They've got the second best passing numbers in the whole entire league after Juventus. Sassuolo, who have been missing for almost all of the start of the season, Jeremy Boga, who was the guy who we went crazy for last season, who we expected to get to go back to Chelsea or to get snapped up by someone in the summer and didn't. And then for some crucial games since then, have been without Ciccio Caputo, their top scorer, without Domenico Berardi, without Juricic, their other forward. A team that has gone through all of that, that has had, okay, not the hardest start of the season, but has gone to Napoli and won. I think it's an incredible story. I don't think, unlike Milan, it's a story that's going to last. But if you're asking me what the standout is through seven games, Sassuolo in second place and unbeaten, it's not a contest.
Yeah, because the standout could be anything. I told you guys it could be a player, a comment, a team. I wonder what you've gone for, Mina Rizzuki.
Bernardeschi.
I just think he's really good for Italy. I just don't know why he doesn't do this for you.
Here we go. I just thought I'm going.
And that's your standout of the season so far.
No. Again, I think that for me, like, I can understand why Nikki is so taken aback by Sassuolo. But when I watch them play, there's just still that element of me that thinks, like, it's a little bit lucky. I don't know how to explain. I do think they play such good football. But I watched them against Crotone, and I actually thought Crotone was pretty good. I watched them against Torino, and I actually felt bad for Marco Giampaolo, and, you know, my feelings about that coach. So there's been a lot of instances where I think that there's a clear maturity in them, that they know how to get through everything. But I'm not entirely sure that they're going to be staying anywhere near the position that they're in now. So I think it's just an early sort of season rise up, if you like. I'm not shocked by Milan either. I love the fact that they've chosen stability. I am shocked they're in first, for sure, but I definitely think they'll make top four at least, you know. And why not challenge? Good on you, Matteo. I think they can challenge as well. I think for me, it's Roma, really, because, you know, Roma would be level on points with Sassuolo if they didn't have their point deducted. But it's also just how smart they look, you know. I mean, I know that we're going to go into greater depths, you know, about them later. But for me, I think I'm just surprised by the fact that they have had changes. There's been a lot of instability from ownership changes. And that's something that threw Milan for a loop. I mean, it would throw many people for a loop in many clubs. But I think the way that they've handled the transition, the way that they've gone through without a sporting director, the changes in the average age of the club, how it's moved from young to old, and just the leadership that's being shown right now from everywhere, I just think that they are such a clever side. I've looked at all their matches and I've never thought they're really lucky, if you want. I think they've just been a really good team, a stable team. And I'd be quite shocked, honestly. Like, I don't know who would have to drop out of the top four for them to make it, because I do think Milan should really end up there with Inter and Juve. And who else would drop out if Roma are to make top four? But they have a very good chance at the moment.
While we're on it then, let's get your top fours. Go on, Matteo.
My top four for the end of the season. I'm going to go with... This is so difficult because I think Juventus and Inter are obviously going to be in the top four. I think Milan are going to be in the top four. While I think that Milan has a chance to win the Scudetto, I still can't put them as the clear-cut favorites. I still think, and Mina and Nikki, I'm sure you'll disagree, I think Inter might end up getting it just because of the depth, because they actually, I think Conte knows what this team is, certainly more than Pirlo knows what Juve is. We've seen more instability for Juventus so far this season. So I'm going to go with Inter number one, Milan number
You're
two, Juve number three,
You're
and Roma number
mad.
Four. And I think with Atalanta and the competitions that they're playing in, we've seen a little bit of a stumble. Can they continue being top four, especially when Roma, as you mentioned, Mina, that they've actually surprised us quite a bit from that nightmare start with the administration error. But Paolo Fonseca really looks like he has something. He has a lot of veteran, intelligent players leading the line. I like their defense. I like some of the signings that they made over the summer. So I'm actually starting to sway a little bit away from Atalanta, and I'm going to give Roma a chance to really finish in the top four. What's certain, though, is that this is going to be the most competitive top four that we have seen in such a long time. For so long now, we've seen Juventus run away with it, with maybe Napoli in the rearview mirror, but they've always won it 9 consecutive seasons, and there hasn't really been that much of a competition towards the end of the table. I think this is going to be wide open until the final match day, and it's probably going to be one of the most entertaining leagues to watch anywhere in the world because of this, because you're not really going to have a clear-cut winner, and it's going to go down to the last whistle.
I mean, I don't even know what to say about you going for Juve in third place. I mean, you're basically
you
saying Pirlo is that much worse than Maurizio Sarri, that he's going to go from there to like, and for some reason you have all this belief in Antonio Conte, who can't get a win in the Champions League against some of the worst sides, you know, and who basically is struggling yet again against Parma, their bogey team, who are completely dependent on Lukaku, God forbid anything happens to him on the long-term injury list. I don't know. I don't have as much faith in Inter as you do. I do think, though, that they have a good enough squad to certainly challenge for the Scudetto, whether or not they make first place. If anything, my bet is on them actually dropping out of the top four at this rate, you know. But having said that, they're probably going to drop out of the Champions League, have no European football, and then they can be fit enough to actually try to go for the Scudetto in the way that I don't think the other teams will have that opportunity.
Mina, you would actually bet money right now that Inter do not finish in the top four at the end of the season.
I'm not saying so, but I'm saying if I'm looking based on current facts, the way that Milan is playing, the way that Roma is playing, even Juve, I see there's more unpredictability there. There's more game changers there. I don't see... If you have to rely on individual quality, I don't see enough of it in Inter. I don't see enough players in that team that can take the responsibility on their own and just score the goal if no one else can do it, other than really Lukaku. And Lautaro Martinez needs a lot of help from the teammates around him. And to be honest, so does Lukaku. He's not somebody that I would trust come hell or high water like I would trust Ibrahimovic or I would trust Ronaldo. He's a little bit like Morata.
Yeah, but he's so much, he's like 15 years younger than some of the players that you mentioned.
Yeah,
he's still coming into his own.
Can you give your top four so I can come in here?
So, sorry, but I don't know. I'm just saying based on current standards, I would say that I still think it's Juventus because of their game changes. I do think it's Inter that eventually they will come through this. I think it's Milan in third, and I think it's Roma in fourth.
I was really having to bite my tongue not to be outraged when you didn't mention Barella and the difference makers at Inter. I think they definitely have difference makers. I think they have plenty of players besides Lukaku who can be, that have not been. I think Lautaro's definitely good enough to be a difference maker. Whether or not he's going to be, it's another question.
But isn't he too young to have all of that pressure? Like, isn't, when I say difference,
it's relative.
I usually rely on veterans to do that. You know?
Yeah. Well, whether I'm not here to fight the good fight for Antonio Conte and him being the manager who can get a little bit out of it. But I think young players have defined seasons plenty of times. So age is not a restrictor for me. I predicted in preseason that Inter would win the league. My confidence has certainly dropped quite a bit from there. I think it's still far too early to draw sweeping conclusions, but I think that Juventus, I expect to get better. I expect them to get better because they have been missing Cristiano Ronaldo, because they're only just getting back Alexandro, because they're only just getting back Matthias de Ligt, who, frankly, I think that Juventus' best 11 might no longer have either of Chiellini or Bonucci in it. We'll see. I think we're going to get on to talking about that. So let's see with Juventus, but I have more confidence in Juventus to end up near where they're supposed to. And the fact that Inter haven't done what Milan have done, haven't done what Napoli have done, and created some buffer, at least got some advantage in this period when Juventus aren't playing well, I think that's a problem for Inter. So I'm probably looking at Juventus to win the league, Milan second, Inter still top four for sure, so probably in third. And right now I'm giving Napoli, who I don't think have got nearly enough conversation out of you two so far, as being in that top four, because Roma are doing great, but so are Napoli.
You think
you've
so?
Actually, you've all done a great job of teasing what's coming up in the show today. Yes, we will be looking at Juve's last 11.
Just to say really quickly as well, none of us mentioned Lazio at all, who were top four.
Yeah, I was
going to
say Lazio. No one mentioned
Lazio. Well, Lazio have nowhere near the depth.
Looking at the table now, there is a reason they're not being mentioned right now. If we are doing these early season predictions, but obviously everything can change. Top scorers so far, and I'll just mention the top assist man is Henrik Mkhitaryan. He tops it with four. He scored or assisted every 81 minutes in all competitions. More on him later. But as for goal scorers, the top goal scorer is Zlatan with 8 goals. Then you have Belotti and Ronaldo with 6, followed by Simeone, Lukaku and Caputo and João Pedro with 5. Any surprises there for you?
Well, Chicho Caputo had, 10 goals ruled off in the first few matches of the season. He should already be the capocannoniere by a long shot. Him and Morata would have had about 65 goals ready this season had he not been an armpit hair offside on so many of them. Those have been the two unluckiest players. My biggest surprise, though, I think, I'm going to go with Chicho Caputo. Let's stay with the Sassuolo kind of topic that Nikki was talking about, them being the surprise team. Chicho Caputo's story is really, I want to say, almost the Italian Jamie Vardy, even though Jamie Vardy was doing it in much lower leagues. But Chicho Caputo's a guy that never got a chance in Serie A. He played like a total of 6 games from the start in his entire 20s in Serie A. He finally gets a chance in the top flight as a starter a few years ago for Empoli, double-digit goal scorer, gets signed by Sassuolo when Empoli go back down to Serie B. And he's becoming a guy who can give you 20 goals or more a season, and completely overlooked throughout his entire Serie B career. As a matter of fact, when he was in Serie B, his strike partner was actually seen as the better player, Alfredo Donnarumma. And Chicho Caputo, out of nowhere, becomes one of the top scorers, one of the most efficient players, someone who can play in link-up. There's a reason why I said I thought he should be the kind of Vice, whoever striker Juventus signed in the summer. I love his game. I love how well-rounded he is. I think he could do a little bit of anything. And he's made to play in a team that follows the modern style of the way that soccer teams are now having a lot of success in 2020, which is playing with the ball at your feet, quick passing, possession, high pressure, high up the pitch. I love Chicho Caputo. I think it's one of the real great stories that have come out in the last few seasons.
But does he finish as top scorer?
I think he's going to be, honestly, Kay, I think he's going to be up there. I think he's going to go over 20 goals. I see him in like 22 to 24 range, which is still a spectacular achievement, given everything I've just said about his career. the fact that he's even in Serie A now, and it took him until his late 30s. It's almost like Luca Toni, right? That he was this late bloomer and then went on to score, had a 30-goal season with Fiorentina. It's an amazing, amazing tale.
I think he's, like, the number you've put on him sounds pretty realistic to me. I don't think that makes you top scorer. I think I actually did the goals per minutes on Zlatan and Ibra, and as good as Zlatan's doing, Zlatan and Ronaldo, Ronaldo's goals per minutes on the pitch are still ridiculous. I think it's one for every 48.3 minutes he's actually been on the pitch. I think he'll be back as Kepa Caniniero this year, if I'm being honest.
Really?
Nina?
Yeah.
It's funny, I always think if you're a very, very good forward, you're not actually Capo Campanieri, because you're more interested in helping the team than you are in scoring goals. And if a team plays for you and you are...
What would Ronaldo say to that?
I know, that sounds so weird. What would Ronaldo say to that? I'm always going to be somebody who loves a Benzema more than I love, you know, a Ronaldo. Does that make sense? Although I love Ronaldo, don't get me wrong, but I love players like Benzema, like...
Yeah, the unselfish players.
Yeah, the unselfish,
like Bernardeschi, right. Basically.
Guys, Cristiano just unsubscribed. Cristiano just unsubscribed from the Serie Awesome feed.
No, I love him. Obviously him and Lukaku are the, I would say, the two obvious ones that would probably, and Ciro Immobile, to be honest, again. Just you expect Lazio to pick up some steam, to be, you know, finding their rhythms again. And they have gone through a lot. So I also think that we haven't expressed how much they've been hit by the likes of COVID, you know, and just lots of things have happened to them that it's been so hard for them to really pick up steam and be the Lazio that we know. So you would expect Ciro Immobile to be up there with the style of play that they play, especially, which is so suited to his talents. But him, Lukaku, Ronaldo, the teams play for them and they provide for them. Whereas I think Caputo is part of a team that sort of everyone has a go, everyone has a chance to score the goal. So I don't know for me, but I would say again, it has to be between the obvious ones, and I'd say it's one of those three. But I do think that Morata can do something special. I feel like he's really keen and he's really happy to be back in Italy. So maybe if he can just time his runs a little bit better, or if we didn't have VAR, he'd definitely do it.
But Nina, again, 3 weeks ago, I have the receipts. We were talking about, is this the time that Alvaro Morata can take the next step in his career and actually become a volume goal scorer? And we were met with ridicule, I'm sure.
Oh, probably,
but we have the
probably.
Receipts and we'll bring them up. We
but will. It just goes to show you how psychology helps. Psychology helps.
Well, he's obviously been listening to Serie A Awesome. Just to wrap up this fun stuff and looking back on the first 7 rounds, we're giving you a hypothetical with the winter transfer window coming up. What's the transfer that you'd most like to see? Or the player maybe that you think most needs a fresh start? And it doesn't matter if it's way out there, and it doesn't matter if it's not even rumoured. I'd love to know. And I ask this because I know Matteo's got one in his head.
Bernardeschi?
No.
No, it's Christian. It's Christian Eriksen, honestly. Yeah. Christian Eriksen has to be the first name on anyone's list when you're looking at transfer targets that you could get for relatively cheap. His value has plummeted ever since the years when he was one of the best attacking midfielders in the Premier League, playing at a very high level in the Champions League with the Danish national team, someone who could score with either foot, who can assist, who was an absolute danger from set pieces, and one of the most recognizable names in European football, you know, when he was at his very peak. And when Inter signed him, I actually thought, and I was wrong, this is exactly what Inter need. They needed a more traditional trequartista, someone who can link the midfield with the attack. But then I forgot that with Antonio Conte, you also need Antonio Conte type players, and he hasn't exactly seemed like that. It's been an awkward fit from the beginning. So I think that Christian Eriksen is one of the most likeliest to try to find a new home. He's a player that expects to start every single game. I don't think it's going to be back in Serie A. I wouldn't be surprised if he goes back to the Premier League and makes a return there.
But didn't you have a swap deal that you wanted to put to Mina?
I do. Paulo Dybala for Paul Pogba. Who says no?
Oh, I would definitely like that. I would definitely like that. Think about it. I mean, the one thing that Juventus really do need right now is a midfielder. And one thing they don't need is any congestion through the middle. So on the basis of everything, except for the fact that they're both so highly paid, or at least Dybala wants to be very highly paid, I don't like how much salary that requires, or what kind of, you know, payments need to be made to agents and things. But come on, who would say no to Paul Pogba coming back to Juventus, being happy again? You know, I don't think he's the world's most outstanding midfielder. I thought that from the start. I think that he worked well in that group dynamic. But I love Dybala in the sense that I think he's got a lot of technique. But for Juventus, I don't like him for that team. I don't particularly think that he fits. And I think that he'll find a lot more freedom and the ability to fulfill this potential that we've been talking about since he was 20. He's 27, FYI. Yeah. Maybe he can fulfill that somewhere else, because otherwise he's supposed to be at his peak and he's not showing that. So why not go somewhere where you can show that? Because it's not happening at Juve.
Vicky, have you got a transfer you'd like to see?
I mean, Eriksen is the obvious answer to someone who needs to move. I was thinking about him and whether there's somewhere in Italy that I can see him. And honestly, there isn't. There isn't another team that I think is in the clubs that could afford a player like him that is screaming for someone like that. I mean, if you want me to be silly, I'd say send him to Benevento, who is really trying to play some attacking football and could do with some real quality behind the attack. But look, it's not. It's, I think, something like PSG is far more likely, or indeed back to the Premier League. The only other one that's really sort of ringing in my head at the moment is Eric Milik, who we're going to get to talking about Napoli and the fact that Osimhen may be missing this weekend. And you think, and yet Milik's not even part of the conversation right now. He's not really part of the squad anymore. And he's had a really rough time with injuries. I don't know where his career is going to finish up. But I hope that he can land somewhere where he's wanted and where he fits, because at his best for Napoli, he was really quite productive. He scored goals and he provides a certain model for striker that teams do use, just not Napoli. I think that the club that he was linked with in the summer, Roma, still feels like the right one to me. I think you could have him as an alternative to Dzeko, who's not a young man, who is going to miss some games. And I think you could make that work. But yeah,
I love him for Fiorentina.
He's definitely a player that needs reclaiming a little bit.
So the big game this weekend is Napoli against Milan, two of the standout sides so far, but we do have some pointers to ponder here. No Victor Osimhen, potentially no Tiemwe Bakayoko either. How are Napoli going to deal with their absences? So Victor Osimhen dislocated his shoulder while on international duty, and the Nigerian Federation said he'll be out for several weeks, although Mateus just told me that Gazzetta do still have him starting in the lineup this weekend. And then as for Bakayoko, he's self-isolating with a fever. He tested negative for COVID, but could still be out at the weekend. But they're surely big misses, Nikki.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, to be reminded that it's possible to be sick with something else. It is possible to get the flu or something else that would stop you from playing football. They are big misses. I think Osimhen is a striking difference in how you play, because he has such a unique skill set. He's such a unique combination of the technical close control and just the physical size that I think it becomes a very different dynamic up front without him. Having said that, against this Milan defense, I think Simon Kjaer has played pretty well since he got to Milan. But if you're going to pick at him and say what his struggles are, I think he isn't the fastest centre-back in the world. And perhaps if you go with that front three of I assume you consider going with Mertens, Insigne and Lozano together, perhaps you can approach the game differently and try and exploit his lack of pace a little bit. I think that Bakayoko quietly could be an even bigger miss, because Diego Demme hasn't played great when he's been in there this season. And you don't really have another option besides Demme in terms of a real sort of battling, holding midfielder, I don't think, in that Napoli team. So they're both big misses, and it's certainly a huge sort of test of both these teams. Because I think that, well, we talked about it before, like which teams we have in our top four, and I have them both in, but both of them are a little bit ahead of where I think we expected them to be. So it's a big test for both of them, and certainly those are significant absences for Napoli.
Significant, but ultimately with Napoli's depth. And before I get into the 11, I just want to concede that I was wrong before. When we were doing the top four, I completely blanked and I forgot about Napoli. Of course, I have Napoli in my top four. I'm putting them ahead of Roma. God. Sorry, Giallorossi fans.
Just to double check, I was right in preseason when I said Milan were a dark horse, and I was right just now about Napoli in the top four. Just to double check.
Yes. But can I also say, since you are claiming credit, you also said in preseason that Napoli wouldn't make top four. So
did I? Possible.
Yes. We both said that. Do you remember?
Nikki. Now, Mina's carrying some receipts, the game of the week. This is the game that we're showing on main ESPN. Big preview, big post. Huge game with two of the most exciting teams. And, you know, Milan surprising. Napoli have been absolutely brilliant. I actually don't think, and this is because of the depth and numbers that Napoli now have, that they're really missing that much. As brilliant as Osimhen is and as good as Bakayoko has been throughout his City adventure, both with Milan and now Napoli, they have so many different options. Like Gattuso can bring in the likes of, if he wants to stay with this 4-2-3-1 and have a striker leading the line, he can bring in Petagna. I don't think that's what he's going to do. He can go 4-3-3 and just play with Mertens, Lozano, Insigne. There's so many different options. He can bring in an extra midfielder like a Zielinski or Elmas, who was absolutely brilliant with North Macedonia as they made their way into the Euro via the playoff route last week. This team knows exactly how to play without an out-out striker. They did it so well with Dries Mertens as that false nine, whatever you want to call it. They can change formation. They can alternate. They have versatility. And Gattuso's really shown that he can play two different systems, one that's way more attacking or one that has a bit more balance in the middle of the pitch. So I think there's so many options for Napoli, and they're going to give a real tough time. Nikki, you said it. The lack of pace with Simon Kjaer, as good as he's been, that's when he struggles. When Milan play a high line and he's got these tricky, plucky little wingers running around him, this is where Simon Kjaer really has difficulty because he is slow. And Romagnoli has made some surprising mistakes already this season, even though I don't think that it's a weakness at all. And I think Romagnoli, I rate him, he's going to snap out of it. But that is definitely an area with the way that Milan want to play under Pioli, that they like to maintain control and possession. That pace and that directness that Napoli can have is going to be absolutely deadly, I think.
I feel like I'm the only one that doesn't like love Napoli as much as everyone else does.
You've come full circle. I feel like you were the first on the Gattuso bandwagon, and now others have got on it with you. You want to get off.
I know, I do. It does always seem like I try to go there. I'm not doing that because I don't believe in Gattuso. I do. It's not him that I have an issue with. I don't believe the team. I don't believe in them. I don't believe in the players in them. I think they're almost too artistic, too beautiful to ever be a side that really knows how to knuckle down and get through the tough times. And I think Gattuso's trying to instill that. I think he's done a terrific job in making it a harmonious dressing room and making everyone work super hard and be able to, you know, understand how to suffer through games. But I just don't see them really capable of that. One of the issues I've always had with them as well is I've never thought that there was a clinical guy up front who can convert all the chances they do create. And while I am in love with Osimhen in the sense that I think he is so tactically intelligent and really helps the side from an offensive point of view, much like Karim Benzema, I do think that he lacks that kind of ruthlessness that I would want for Napoli again, so that I can be sure that everything they are creating will be efficiently rounded off. So there's still a part of me that doesn't believe in them, but this is a Milan side that doesn't have Stefano Pioli because he's obviously out with COVID. And so is his second.
Daniele Bonera.
Bonera.
And so now they have the third man in charge, which is, like you said, Bonera. And I think that's going to be a huge thing to have to deal with, you know?
Why are we laughing?
Because you've got a funny nickname for him.
Which I'm not going to say. That was during my ESPN blogging days. And now it's
not offensive or anything. But no. Zlatan play at coach.
Radio silence.
That would be amazing. What would you think of that?
So, yeah, maybe it is going to be like a Zlatan play. I don't know. I feel like they're going to have the tactics that they're going to know how to neutralize Napoli. But I do agree with Matteo in the sense that Napoli can play an array of different ways. You know, they really know how to have a stunning attack. They know how to control the midfield. They do have a strong defense. They are very complete. It's whether or not their mentality has always been one that's disappointed me. And Maurizio Sarri said that if it's one thing he could take from Juventus and implant into his team was the mentality of Juve. And Ancelotti came and he tried to change that too. It just never works for me. And I think no matter how much Gattuso is going to yell at these guys, there's something there that's just a little bit weak, and they have to prove me wrong for me to change my mind.
It sounds like you don't think then that they will be the team to bring an end to Milan's unbeaten run.
No, I still believe in Milan, even if they do have Bonera. I don't know what it is, or at least it's going to be a draw. I think Napoli certainly has the tools to inflict damage, but I just don't think they have the mentality. And right now, Milan have proved that they really are desperate to make sure that they don't drop points in Serie A. And the way that they fought for that is really stunning to watch, frankly speaking. And I don't think they're going to want to let down Pioli, and certainly not Zlatan.
I do think the Bonera thing is fascinating. I mean, it is pretty unprecedented for a team to sort of get shunted from its first team manager to not just his assistant, but the next in line after that at such short notice. And look, Bonera is not someone who sort of woke up and discovered football yesterday. He played indeed at Milan. He completed his UEFA Pro license at exactly the same time as Andrea Pirlo did. So he's qualified. He's fully qualified to do this job. But it's a question, right? Like, it's a question we talk all the time about the impact managers have on matches and how they change things. And Bonetta's never done this before. Yes, at that sort of conversation about Zlatan, and by what's been reported, Zlatan kind of said that to him in training. Look, don't worry, I'll help you out. You've got some leaders here. But It's still a question. This is going to be the first game he takes charge of.
Do we think Bonera is going to have one of those Bluetooth with a direct line to Stefano Pioli dimly lit room?
For sure, Pioli's not going to be like, yeah, you take charge of this hugely important match. I'll just sit down and lay. No, he's going to be on the phone.
Also, what are we betting that Zlatan at least once in the game is going to give his death stare to Bonera when he sees a substitution? And you know, Bonera, there's no way he's subbing Zlatan out. No one dares to do that.
No, he won't.
Together. They were in the same squad for it. Can't remember how many years they were in the same squad.
The last time Milan won a Scudetto.
Mm. Yeah.
So 10 years ago.
How old was I? 10? Sure. No, I'm joking.
Mina's not so sure Napoli can bring an end to Milan's unbeaten run in this game. What do you think, Nikki?
I think it's really hard to know how teams come back from an international break. I think that's really significant. I think until Milan lose the game, I'm gonna keep backing them. So I'll take Milan to win the game.
I'm going to say high-scoring draw, maybe a 2-2. There's going to be goals. It's going to be end-to-end. It's going to be a real fight for the balance in the midfield. It's one of the games I'm really looking forward to the most so far this season that we've done, just because of the way that the two sides have played. I think it's going to be a spectacle, and it's going to be on ESPN. Did I already mention that? With coverage at 2 p.m., you got the ESPN FC boys. 2 p.m. Eastern. ESPN FC's wrapping up the game with a studio show, so there's going to be a lot of coverage around it, and it's going to be a real nice event on a Sunday afternoon on the mothership. It's going to be massive.
Juventus are at home to Cagliari this weekend. Worth knowing that Matthijs de Ligt and Alexandro return to training on Tuesday. Leonardo Bonucci is expected to be out for 2 weeks, but for De Ligt, it will be the first game since undergoing shoulder surgery in August. But what Juve are we going to see? What is the best Juve 11? Will you all agree on it? Probably not, but it is a task I'm going to put to you. Nikki, have you put a best 11 down?
I've written one down. I have lots of questions in my own 11, but this is what I've gone with. Chesney in goal, obviously. Cuadrado and Sandro as your two fullbacks. I've gone with De Ligt and Danilo at centre-back. I know there's going to be disagreement here. I really honestly think that Chiellini is as brilliant as he has been. I think we are seeing the end of Chiellini's career. And that's just being realistic about how often he's on the pitch and what he's able to give. Bonucci, I have not been especially impressed by this season at all. I think his own career has been on a sort of slowly declining path for a little bit. So I would rather that you give De Ligt the full opportunity in there. Of course, he hasn't played yet this season. I can already see Mina waiting to kill me, but I'm going to just finish and then Mina can get all over it. My central midfield pairing, I think this is the weakest part of the team for me. Bentancur is the only name I feel happy about. I've gone with Weston McKennie. He's got plenty still to prove. I think he gives you a different dynamic. But I've based this team, by the way, still on the Pirlo idea, which is when you're in possession, you're trying to transition to this like 3-2-5. So I think you have to have two midfielders who are willing to hold the ground there. So I think that's two players who can do that. Then on the wings, again, decisions that I don't love. Kulusevski's easy. That's the one certainty on the wing for me. I've gone with Federico Chiesa. I want to see a lot more, but that's what I've gone with for now. I think he gives you a certain kind of dynamism. Perhaps the other options don't. Up front, it's Morata and Ronaldo, which was the easy bit. I feel really uncomfortable leaving out Dybala in this formation.
As you should,
Nicky. I don't think he works. In this formation, I don't think he works. Last season under Maurizio Sarri, he was magnificent, and I will not hear disagreement on that, even though I'm not going to get it anyway. Okay. He was magnificent last season.
He was good.
In this formation, and I'm doing it Pirlo's way, I don't see that he fits. So that's my 11.
In Pirlo's thesis that we all fawned over, he said that he could play a 4 or a 3. We've only seen a 3, but it does change to a 4 throughout the course of the game based on whether he's defending or attacking. So I've scrapped the 3-5-2 altogether because of how many good players you have, especially leading the line. And I looked at a 3-5-2. I'm like, hold on, I'm going to sit Dybala. I'm going to sit this guy. So I'm going 4-3-3. Chesney in goal. I'm going with Cuadrado as a right back. I'm going with the center back tandem of Chiellini and De Ligt. Chiellini healthy. I still don't want to bench him. I'm sorry. Alexandro is a left back. No surprises there. I'm going with a midfield 3 because I've seen that when they've only had 2 midfielders, they can get overrun in the midfield. They have no control. And it's a shame because they have so many good attacking players. So I'm going to trust Arthur. I'm putting him next to Bentancur and McKennie. McKennie can do the dirty work. Bentancur and Arthur can do the playmaking. And my trident, Dybala in the middle, Ronaldo on the left, Kulusevski on the right, That means that Chiesa's on the bench. You have a few other good players on the bench, like Morata, that you can bring in as a super sub. But I think that this 4-3-3 is the best Juve 11 on paper if everyone's healthy.
I just feel like, I mean, the fact that no one mentioned Bernardeschi is just, I'm joking. Firstly, like, I cannot even believe from the selection of defenders that there are, from De Ligt to Demiral to Bonucci to Chiellini, you pick Danilo as one of the best. Are you mad? Like, I understand that he's done well in the three, but like, seriously, he's played well for like four games. The guy has been a tragedy in Real Madrid.
Get this reaction out to me.
Nikki, unexpected recency bias from Nikki, I must say.
Yes, I mean, that's just so bizarre. It's like Demiral has been a firestorm last season. She talks about the magnificence of Dybala, yeah, but like, you know, who tanked for most seasons. But Danilo gets four games in and she's like, yeah, for sure, over Chiellini and Bonucci. Anyway, I agree more with Matteo's midfield. I love that. At the back, for me, the centre-back partnership, De Ligt, Chiellini sounds good to me. I'm happy with Bonucci being there as well. I do want a veteran and a younger guy. So, however you want to play it, Alexandro and Cuadrado on the wings again. Those are the best fullbacks. I do think it's much better to have a midfield three. I do like Weston McKennie in there. I think he has to be in there, frankly speaking. And for me, the other has to be there as well, is Arthur, who scored his goal for Brazil. So hopefully that's going to fill him with a lot of happiness and confidence that he requires going forward. When it comes to the front line, it's very hard because I think Morata is wonderful, but I would probably stand him down for the simple sake that I would like Ronaldo in the middle, and I would like him to be flanked by Federico Chiesa and Kulusevski, because of the fact that they are traditional wingers. They do want to help him out, but at the same time are good enough on their own. I think it's a very good counter-attacking team as well. And then, like you said, there's always an option to change everything if you like. There's Ramsey to bring on or Dybala to bring on if we have to, you know, maybe because he's complained to Agnelli this time. And then we can, you know, always change that around. But I love that kind of team. Whether or not it's good enough going forward, whether they can all agree, is something else. But Juventus have a lot of work to do.
So let me get this right. Two out of the three of us are relegating last season's City MVP to bench warmer. Okay.
Right.
Okay, we've all given up hope on Dybala.
Do you know what? Rather than pick on all the things we disagree on, I just want to sort of highlight one name here who I don't think we talk about enough. Juan Cuadrado is not coming off anyone's team sheet, and that's partly to do with an absence of alternatives, but I really think his contribution to this team, like the consistency he's given over the last couple of seasons in particular at right back, someone who was perceived as being like a forward forced into right back, I think a few seasons ago, has really developed into a really reliable, responsible right back who still contributes to the attack. I think he's a really underrated element in that Juventus team.
And it's gone into the way that football has been, right? With fullbacks increasingly being wingers that, you know, maybe are getting up in age and they're taught how to defend rather than to attack. It seems maybe it's an easier department for someone like Cuadrado to learn instead of his, you know, trickery with the ball at his feet, which he's always going to have. So it makes total sense. And that's right. Cuadrado's been one of the real pleasant surprises with his consistency in a position that was never really his throughout his 20s.
Let's end it there, where you actually agree on something for once, all of you. Quickly moving on to Inter against Torino. Inter, 4 without a win in all competitions. Torino had been on the upturn since mid-October. So what happens here in this one? Anyone got any thoughts?
I think Torino's going to steal a point here. I really do. Marco Giampaolo, for as much as we've been critical of him, and rightfully
so, favorite manager in the league.
Easily one of my favorite managers now in the league. He was a disaster at Milan. We've talked about all the reasons why we don't like Giampaolo as much for a big team, but he's been brutally unlucky with Torino. I mean, some of the games that they've dropped have been absolute daggers to the heart. Like, you wouldn't believe what they endured against Lazio, the penalty in the 91st minute, and then Caicedo scoring on the last touch of the game. Those are games that Torino should have picked up 3 points, and they would have been on a pretty good streak. And you are suddenly seeing changes that Giampaolo is bringing. Giampaolo isn't some guy off the street. You know, his Sampdoria side was really one of the most fun teams to watch 3 years ago or whatever it was. This could be a bit of a bogey game for Inter because Torino have been brutally unlucky. It seems like they're starting to go somewhere. It's definitely a better side than they were last season under Walter Mazzarri when they were conceding like 6 goals a game. I'm actually a little bit worried for Inter in this one.
I feel like I agree with a lot of what you said. I think the biggest issue Inter's defense talked about in the last few weeks, it's a problem and Belotti's on fire, but I think I need to get out of the way and let Mina talk about Giampaolo, because I just heard praise for Marco Giampaolo on this podcast.
It wasn't praise. It just wasn't anything critical. I think it was right in the medium of emotion.
He was balancing out past comments.
I was, but not praise.
Listen, I mean, when we talked about it, you just said, you know, because we don't know how he was going to do with a big club like Milan. I mean, it wasn't like he was a success at Brescia. To be frank, really, Sampdoria and Empoli are the only two that I remember where he wasn't a disaster. But frankly speaking, I think that he has to have a side that's specifically built for what he needs. And I think that's quite hard to do. But I do agree with you. I think he's been unlucky. And that's why I see, like, sometimes when we talk about Sassuolo, I think they have been lucky as well, you know. Whereas Torino, I feel bad for them. And there's sometimes simple mistakes that I end up undoing them entirely. And I think that he's gotten something good out of Belotti. I think Belotti's performing very well this season and to the levels that we expect from him. But with... It's very difficult with Antonio Conte sides because you really don't know what to expect. Lukaku should be there. I know that there's a lot of anger right now about all the players have gone for international games. And, you know, there's been a lot of things said over the news and arguments picked with coaches of national teams. But you're right. I do think this could be a draw. And if it is one, then it's just even more conversations on why Antonio Conte's paid 12 million and I'll start them. So don't worry.
You just mentioned Antonio Conte 12 million again. Nicolò Barella, you were a little bit upset earlier that he hadn't been mentioned. Shining on the international stage and the domestic stage. Give us a little bit more on him.
Oh, I'm just in love with Barella at the moment. I think he's playing such
beautiful.
It's not just that he's playing really good football, which he is, but he's playing aesthetically pleasing football, which is obviously not your first job as a footballer. Your first job as a footballer is to fill your role in the team. And I think you can't argue that he's done that so well for Inter since he got there. I think his maturation in the last, 18 months since he got there, less than from being a player who at Cagliari was obviously a standout player, but that was like a, listen, this team hasn't got that much going for it. You've just got to be everywhere and do everything job. And I think when he first got to Inter, he still had that sort of mindset to his game. And I do think Antonio Conte, doesn't mean he gets everything right, Mina, but I think he's helped Barella hone himself into a much more focused player who understands a role that he can play between the midfield and attack. And he does that really well. But
is it fair to say that Barella, just really quickly,
yeah,
the similarities between him and the Vidal that we saw at Juventus when Antonio Conte was the manager, when Vidal was scoring 10, 11 goals a season and he was getting forward and he was doing everything in the midfield. Vidal is no longer that player, but it's almost like we're seeing Barella kind of epitomizing that ideal box-to-box player that Conte has always had in his teams, who has always thrived.
I think that's definitely the idea. The thing I just wanted to end on there was just like, he's doing all that and he's throwing me back heels that I can jump out of my seat and get excited about. Like he did it again at the
weekend.
I think that's, oh my God, that's exactly what it is. This is when the comparison, he's got the kind of technique that is outrageous. And I do think, like you said, Antonio Conte has made him better, but I also think that he's a player in specific who benefits from having like-minded, intelligent players around them. At Cagliari, he was surrounded by good players, but at Inter, he's surrounded by much better players. And then you can see him also shine in that level. But can I just say, he treats his ankle like a wrist. It's almost like the power that it has, you know, like the way that he just knows how to direct balls. It's almost like it acts like a wrist. He's stunning to watch, you know, but I do think that he's one of those guys that does need a good team around him, because then you see him truly be the difference maker.
Roma-Parma is the next game we're getting to. As Matteo mentioned earlier, there was that admin error to start the season. But as you were saying, Mina, at the top of the show, Roma have very much been on the up since. So how can they avoid the post-winter slump that they suffered last season? Now, the attack are absolutely flying. We've already mentioned Mkhitaryan, top assist man in the league right now, Edin Dzeko and Pedro. Between the three of them, it's 13 goals in their last four league games. They have made Roma's forward line one of the best Serie A has to offer. But given that they are all upwards of 30, and with injuries hurting all three of them over recent seasons, can they keep this up, Mina?
Yeah, I honestly believe so. I know that a lot is always said about sort of older men, but being in Serie A, but Serie A is a league that values obviously thought more than movement almost at times. You know, it's like you have to think about everything. You have to think of how to unlock the defense and how to move forward and the tactics that are being implemented. And I think that Paulo Fonseca, for one, has really understood and developed with what is required in Serie A. He understands how to neutralize opponents. He's not someone who just puts out a team and thinks we'll impose our tactics on them. And I think that he benefits a lot more from having older men there, to be honest with you, which is why I think that there'll be more stability there than sometimes with youngsters. They'll have a slump or something will go wrong, and you know, because they're kids, right? And whereas you can depend a lot more on older senators, the veterans, if you like. I also want to mention that as much as the three are so perfect as well, I do love Lorenzo Pellegrini in his role, because I think he offers so much in terms of vision and creativity, and he really knows how to launch that attack. He's next to Veretout. Honestly, that midfield for me is wonderful, because I think it adds so much to the attack, and it also adds so much to have Smalling as well back. And that's one thing that Fonseca asked for over the summer, is please, please get me that defender back. So I believe that on this occasion, at least from an emotional and mentality point of view, I tend to trust veterans more, and when it goes to about, you know, with the slump, trying to avoid that slump. They don't have kids, so hopefully, like, well, they have less kids than usual. So maybe that will be the difference.
And they're doing all this without Nicolò Zaniolo, who is their best young player.
They do have a kid, but he's not available.
Yeah, and that's a kid that I want out every single match day. It's just been brutally unfortunate. No team has had the misfortune that Roma has had with ACL injuries in particular, just these devastating injuries that are keeping a lot of their top players out for half the season. I know that now doctors have gotten a lot better at diagnosing and treating ACL injuries. It used to be that you'd be out for more than a year. Now you can get a player back in 6 months. Zaniolo has said that he's going to be back stronger than ever, but now you're looking at two very serious injuries in the span of a 12-month period, which is absolutely heartbreaking, because I always remember Zaniolo's last game before the first injury when it was against Juventus, and he went on this incredible mazy run, and then he just fall down, and he was just trying to twist direction, and it all happened on his own doing, as often you see with these ligament injuries. And it's so heartbreaking, because even now they have so many players out, you know, they're constantly having to tinker, and Fonseca switched formations. He's not one of these managers that's stuck to one system. He'll go from a three to a four, it doesn't matter, and he does have options when everyone's healthy. This is such a fun team potentially, and we've seen little glimmers of it. I mean, just think of Carles Perez, the goal that he scored against Benevento when he was like invoking his inner Maradona. He's out. Dzeko's apparently not starting. It's gonna be Borja Mayoral. So there's constantly changes in this Roma team. They have been so brutally unlucky, and I cannot wait for the day that they have all their most important players there for Fonseca to work with, and that is a top four team.
Nikki, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I essentially agree with everything that was just said. I think Zaniolo, unfortunately, I have this fear now that it's never going to happen, that he's going to keep getting injured, because there are some players that happens to. I really hope I'm wrong, but that's the fear I have in my head at the moment.
Wait, hold on. Matteo just said they are a top four team. So is it Napoli or Roma? You have to choose one.
No, I changed my mind, because I was blanking on Napoli. I'm putting Napoli almost as like a 55-45 split with Napoli and Roma. But I think those are the teams that are going to challenge
for
the top four.
See this fence that he sat on here?
I'm not on the fence. I'm not on the fence. I conceded that I was wrong. I conceded to Nikki, who rightfully called both me and Mina out, and I was expecting Mina to change her mind as well. But this is the point.
Can I change your mind about Napoli?
Yeah, I just a reminder of preseason.
When have we had this talk that we have no clue about who's winning the Scudetto, who's in the top four? This is why this is the best Serie A season in ages.
Let's see if this changes things, because the games ahead, talking about unlucky, this is Roma's schedule ahead. They have Napoli and Atalanta away before the year is out. Sassuolo visit the Olimpico in that time. Then they have Lazio away and Inter at home. That comes in January. So surely that will give us a fairer idea after this run of games of exactly where they are at.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this will be the test, really, to see whether or not that they are just a team that can coast, or at least, you know, manage to perform to expectations. But my belief is that, quite honestly, with the performances that they managed against Juventus and Milan, I wouldn't think that they can't manage twice as good as they get and develop a closer bond between them. If this is what they're like at the start of the season, God knows how they'll be when there's even more chemistry within the side.
There's another game really quickly that I think we're all going to be taking a closer look at because of the conversations that we had last week about new Fiorentina boss Cesare Prandelli. His Fiorentina side plays Benevento. I'm curious more than anything to see if he can unlock some of those best players. I think of Gaetano Castrovilli, who's shown us so many more signs. It was pretty evident. You got to get that guy closer to goal. So a lot of changes that I'm sure we'll talk about next week in City Awesome, but that we're all going to be really monitoring this weekend.
Well, yeah, let me tell you, actually, because their CEO, Joe Barone, who I met, actually, in Miami a few years ago, lovely guy, he says that the club have no intention of bringing in a striker like Milik or Piontek this winter. And he feels that Prandelli can actually work and enhance what they already have. He said, we have the right strikers, full stop. I cannot wait to see them work with Cesare. His ideas will enhance our three forwards, Vlahovic, Kwame, and Cutrone. He went on to say that football, his football, Cesare Prandelli's football, will make Ribery, who sometimes burns energy unnecessarily, he said, even better. So there's definitely optimism there, but they're feeling that what they have, Prandelli can work with, Nikki.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you were to sort of go back through Prandelli's best years and say what were some of his greatest successes, I would say it's getting the most out of some of the forwards he had. There were some very good forwards in that group, but nevertheless, Luca Toni had his 31-goal season under Prandelli. You got Adrian Mutu produced some of his most productive goal-scoring seasons under Prandelli. Alberto Gilardino, who'd gone through sort of mid-career, sort of lost period at Milan, came to Fiorentina, scored a bunch of goals. And then we talked about it last week, the national team. I think he gave us the only, maybe not the only, but certainly the best window of Antonio Cassano and Mario Balotelli that anyone gave us, in my opinion. So I have sort of that in my head, that this is what he's best at. I don't know that any of those names that you just said excite me as players, and that's a question. I also have this bad feeling managers... It so rarely works out when they go back. It's so rarely that a manager goes back to their best success and does it again.
I want to push back just very quickly because Cutrone, I feel like we know what he is. He's a traditional poacher. But
yeah.
Christian Kwame, who we saw shades of at Genoa as the Christoph Piontek partnering, right? One of the reasons why Piontek was scoring that many goals is he had Kwame right alongside him. But the other one, Dusan Vlahovic, who last season, his size, his technique, his pace... He looks like one of the players that I was actually pinpointing in the summer to have an absolute breakout season. Now, we haven't seen it yet, but I think Vlahovic is one of those guys that has all the characteristics to be this big modern striker, can play with the ball at his feet. He has absolutely everything to take the next level. I'm actually pretty bullish and excited about the way that two of those players, especially Vlahovic and Kwame, can hopefully break out when you have the likes of Castrovilli and Chiesa flank you on either side. There's going to be a lot of creativity
and a lot Chiesa of balls anymore. Coming their way. No Chiesa anymore. Yeah. I would...
Chiesa. Oh, sorry, Ribery and Castrovilli. Did I say Chiesa?
Yeah.
You did.
Wrong day.
I totally agree with you about Castrovilli, though. Like, the thing that I'm most excited to see with Prandelli is, please put Castrovilli in something like a number 10 position and let the kid play, because I think he really, really could do something in that role. And I want Prandelli to do it. And he's used number 10s before, so it's certainly possible.
Before we do go, there's some breaking news on Serie Awesome. Barnsley, have inquired about signing the mercurial Mario Balotelli. Don't forget, he won the Premier League title with Man City in 2012. Three Serie A titles with Inter. The Italy striker has also spent time with Liverpool, Milan and Marseille. He is now a free agent and Barnsley are interested. Any thoughts?
I've always been curious to see what Balotelli could do at Barnsley. So this is actually a story that I've been hoping would come out in quite some time. Can he do it on a cold, wet, rainy night in Barnsley? That's the age-old question, isn't it?
I'm sure this is what he's... I can't believe any of you didn't mention this in transfers that you would like to
That's
see
so
for
true.
Players who need a
That's
fresh
so
start.
True.
All right. That will do it for this edition. Just one reminder, again, if you didn't get it through the show, I mean, I don't know where you were if you didn't. What's the game you've got this weekend, Matteo?
Milan-Napoli. Massive. 2 p.m. Eastern, ESPN.
Yeah, Napoli against Milan coming up. Anyway, thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next week to look back on all of it. Ciao for now.